Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. Welcome to the interview with Hugh Hewitt, sponsored by AndrewandTodd.com. Andrew and Todd are with Sierra Pacific Mortgage. They help you with all your real estate lending needs. If you're refinancing your home, if you're buying a new home, if you're a senior who wants a reverse mortgage, or if you're a veteran who doesn't want to put any money down, whatever it is, if you're in the private real estate market for yourself, and maybe you want an investment property, try AndrewandTodd.com or call 888-888-1172. Now on to the interview with Hugh Hewitt. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. On this 5th of July, we are celebrating the 4th of July in our traditional fashion here on the Hugh Hewitt Show with an interview with novelist Daniel Silva about his brand new book, The Cellist. It is something many million of you look forward to every summer. I have been talking to Daniel Silva, I think, since 2008, every summer, maybe since 2007. Daniel, welcome back. Congratulations on The Cellist. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's so good to be back. If you read all the way through to the acknowledgments and author's note, you saw that I had to do a quick change on the book, and it was a interesting stretch run, to say the least, trying to get it ready for publication.
In 6 weeks. Unlike my other tradition, I normally do not finish Daniel's books because I don't want to do any spoilers, but I couldn't put it down. And so I finished it. And so we're in dangerous territory here, Daniel. I have to be careful for no spoilers. Okay. But I read it all the way.
It gives us some things to talk about, though.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to start... Nothing will be left to chance in our interview, Daniel, using one of the lines from the book. I asked Admiral Stavridis last Monday if he had gotten the book, and he's got it. He's reviewing it. And so we talked about Putin. So I want to begin by the czar in the book. Intentionally rude and vulgar, he took pleasure in the discomfort of others. He used to people being nervous. And he's back. I mean, you're back with Gabriel Alon and his nemesis, the unnamed czar in Moscow. And if anything, we've gone through 12 years of naivete about Putin. Is anyone ever going to wake up to what you say, a nuclear armed gangster?
Well, I think what I find interesting about the Biden approach, and what this book really focuses on, is how Putin and the new Russia, from the very outset, seize control of Russian cash flows and Russian state assets, one, to make themselves rich beyond belief, but also to use that money as a weapon against us, and to deliberately corrupt the West with their money. Last year, the British government released the Russia Report, which spelled out in painstaking detail the damage that Russian money had done to British democracy over the years. They didn't release this report in 2020. I published a book in 2013 about Russian money in Britain and the damage it was doing. But this book focuses explicitly on that. And if you look at what I wrote in the book, about the damage that the Russian money is doing and what the Biden administration said a couple of weeks ago when they announced their new measures. I mean, there's no daylight between Gabriel Alon and what he says about Russian money and what our new approach is. And that new approach is as my friend David Ignatius wrote in his column when he wrote about it, is that American intelligence agencies now have basically free rein to find and freeze and go after this money, not simply because it was earned through corruption and theft of state assets, but because it is a threat to our national security.
I agree with that. I hope you are right. I am only afraid that the rescission of some sanctions on Nord Stream 2 and the apparent assent to the construction of Nord Stream 2 will put even more money and even more control into the Kremlin's hands. Go ahead.
But Nord Stream gets tangled up in European politics and relationships with allies, and it always has. And this is something that we can do on our own. And without giving too much of the book away, this is exactly what Gabriel does in this, is to identify someone from Putin's inner circle, put a target on his back, get inside his financial operation, find his assets. Show what he's doing, and then target him and use dollar supremacy, this enormous clout that we have because the dollar is the world reserve currency, to blow him to smithereens. And we can do it.
Disintermediation. Yeah, disintermediation of money is a very important thing. George W. Bush in the Oval Office told me that was an important arsenal in our tool. Disintermediation of ill-gotten gains from tyrants is a great idea. We didn't do enough of it. I hope Team Biden does it, but I can't separate Nord Stream as easily as you do. Let me go back.
Okay.
In 2009, I went back and reread our interview. You said that, and he made one mistake, alone did. In 2009, your book, The Defector, talking about Moscow rules, that was leaving Ivan alive. And you know what happens when you harm a bad Russian? They come looking for vengeance. That's certainly the case with Kharkov. You also wrote that you referred to London, there are 200,000 as, you know, a Russian city sometimes known as London. Those books were about Russia. They were years ago. You're back, and it's remarkable how much worse it's gotten in 10 years. Have you reflected on that, how much worse the problem has gotten?
Well, I think if you look at my body of work, Moscow Rules, The Defector, you have to remember that Moscow Rules, which in effect declared that Vladimir Putin is a bad actor, that Vladimir Putin is going to launch a new Cold War against us. This is where we're still trying to get him inside the tent. We're still hopeful. That book was very, very prescient. No one had yet sort of made that ironclad declaration about Putin and his intentions. That was ahead of its time a little bit. But if you look at the body of work overall, I think it stands the test of time. I think I was ahead of the curve in understanding that having these Kremlin-connected billionaires living amongst us, enriching people, shoveling money at lawyers and accountants and bankers and politicians was going to have a corrosive effect on our societies and our financial institutions, and the British will admit that. They would,
in
the report, they said that Russia, that London had turned into the Russia laundromat.
Ahead of your time. In fact, when I reread those interviews, only about Russian money and not only about Putin, but about the willingness of Russia to play by Moscow rules in the West. And we've had a series of assassinations, which are early in the book, reviewed in The Cellist. And people need to get The Cellist early, by the way. It's going to sell out right away for a lot of reasons. It's going to be very controversial and very good and very well known for a lot of reasons. But it was very prescient. That's why we read the 2008-2009 interviews, is because it's all connected. Let me go back to that in terms of Putin. The only other guy who had his number was Cheney. You know, the vice president told me the first time I interviewed him, I looked in his eyes and I saw a KGB agent. You have never had any other doubt. You've never had a KGB colonel. You've never had any doubt at all, Daniel Silva.
No.
Do they read this book in Russia? Do they get it? Do they get Silva novels in Russia?
They did for a while in Russian. I guess that there should be no doubt in anyone's mind that I am in effect a Russian dissident and a Russian pro-democracy activist in my own way. And I have not been back to Russia, and I would not go back to Russia.
Oh, no book signings in Leningrad for St. Petersburg.
No,
for you.
Too bad, because as someone who studied Russian history and the history of the Soviet Union, I loved the time that I spent in Moscow and Leningrad. For me, they're these cities that you just sort of trip over history at every corner. You know, something, this happened in this spot in the revolution, and this happened here. And I actually loved the time I spent in Russia. And I want what is best and what the poor Russian people deserve, and they are getting the bad end of the stick, as we say. I mean, the wealth of the country is being siphoned and drained away from them by a handful of people connected to Vladimir Putin.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about how Gabriel Lahn, the head of Mossad in this book, and it is the 21st Gabriel Lahn novel, what he is doing, and a little bit of the outline. No spoilers here. I will say, however, that every time I go, I was just in Maine with my sister-in-law, I find another Silva addict, and we're going to talk about how more of them are coming. But in the meantime, go to Amazon.com on this July 5, order The Cellist, because if you don't, you're going to find temporarily out of stock on your bookstore when you go to get it in person. Go just order it at Amazon, get it on the first day available. Come right back for more of Daniel Silva on this July 5, 2021. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. That is a beautiful, I think it is Brahms cellist piece. I am joined by Daniel Silva. The reason I'm playing cello music and music from The Cellist is because Daniel Silva apparently is a master of classical music, not content with cornering every art history major ever in the United States and every museum patron ever in the United States for his books. He now wants every musician, classical music enthusiast, and FM radio station to fall into line and get the Gabriel Lahn novel. My question, Daniel Silva, there is a lot, I mean a lot, in the, is this learned or is it earned? By that I mean, did you study up to write this book or are you a classical music junkie?
You know, my day literally starts with, I wake up, I've got a nice little stereo with a CD player and headphones right there by the bedside. So I'll pop some light string quartet or something morning like Baroque music, early classical music, and find out what's going on in the classical music world that day and what new albums are coming out this week. I listen to classical music a lot while I'm writing. I listen to classical music while I'm reading. And because I don't really sleep very much, I listen to classical music all night. So I'm a total classical music junkie.
Well, that was Rachmaninoff. Yeah, you are. I'm not. So I had to be careful spelling everything. That was Rachmaninoff's vocalized, played by Rostropovich.
That was Rostropovich's version. And it's actually really a beautiful version.
It's central to the book. That's why I picked it. We'll play a couple more. However, let me ask you about where you get the ear for that. That does not start unless you start early. Where did you pick up the ear for this? And where did you pick up the knowledge, for example, of you name all these artists who Anna might play with, including these legends, are all over the book. I want to, you know, Claudia Abbado, Daniel Barenboim, Herbert von Karajan. Where did you get all this?
If you're a classical music person, these names are like second nature to you. They're all over your CD collection. You hear their names when you're listening to classical music. These are the people of our world. They're like, you know, Tom Cotton and Mike Pompeo. I mean, they're that common.
Oh my goodness!
And so it's fun to drop names of conductors and musicians who I spend my day with. And I had to apologize to one.
I saw that in the end note. Yes. I thought that was funny. That was a very nice aside. I also love the fact that you've got not only the names of the, you have a very believable character from way back. I told my brother, who has not read, he has to begin with The Kill Artist and read him in order. Because and I'm right, because you go way back for a character in The Cellist.
I went way back on this one because there was a character from the second Gabriel Lahn novel, who was a violinist named Anna Rolfe. And she's one of my favorite characters. And I've always wanted some vehicle to bring her back in some small way. And this is the book that it turned out to be the vehicle. And
oh, it's beautifully.
So to have her back on the page. And the chapter where she appears in chapter 31, the scene between them, I'm just very, very proud of that scene.
You should be.
It's tender and funny, and it's written at about three different levels. So people who are familiar with the book will know the meaning of when she looks out the window into the garden, because they will have read, they know what happened in that garden a long time ago.
And they will also smile, Danny, as I did when the household staff greets Gabriel. This is the way, I mean, it's just very funny if you're an Elan reader and a Silva addict. When we come back, we're going to talk about the over. If this is confusing to you, I didn't do the setup right. We got to tell you who Gabriel Elan is. I've got two score new stations, Danny, since last summer. So we got to set the stage when we come back for the long segment. But in the meantime, if you're intrigued, go order The Cellist right now. And if you're an addict, you already have. But if you haven't, because you didn't know it was coming, it's coming. And it's going to be sold out for a lot of reasons. The Cellist by Daniel Silva. Or go to danielsilvabooks.com on Twitter, Daniel Silva Book. I'll be right back on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Brahms' Cello Sonata in E Minor. My friends, this is Hugh Hewitt talking to Daniel Silva about his brand new book, The Cellist. I am using only music from The Cellist. Silva is the only author for whom I have to do homework. Honest to goodness, I have to do homework with Google as I read his books because I want to know about this. I don't know if you've ever seen The Final Quartet with Christopher Walken and Philip Seymour Hoffman, Daniel, but it's a it's a wonderful movie about a string quartet with a great cellist with two great actors, one of whom is unfortunately gone. But let's go back and do what I should have done in the first segment. Would you give I got two score new stations since you were here last July, a little bit about Gabriel Elan and the arc of these 21 books, which together make up a masterwork and individually stand alone. And this one among the very best. It's never going to make the Moscow Rules for me, but this is really, you know, the silver goes to this book.
Okay. Okay, you want me to try to give the 15-second Gabriel Elan biography? I'll give it.
Yeah, the Wikipedia on Gabriel Elan.
He is the child of Holocaust survivors, born in the state of Israel. His mother was a very talented painter. His grandfather was a very, very talented German expressionist painter who died in the Holocaust. He was supposed to be a painter. He started studying art after he got out of the military. And in 1972, because he was a fluent German speaker, grew up in a German-speaking household, was recruited to take part in the Operation Wrath of God, which was to target and eliminate the perpetrators of the Munich Olympics massacre. His work in that endeavor really sort of stripped him of the ability to produce new original work. He personally killed six people at close range with a handgun. And so after that operation, he became an art restorer. And for a number of years, he used that as his cover while he was working for Israeli intelligence. And this book finds him in the twilight of his career as chief of the Israeli intelligence service. And it is, in all likelihood, the last book where Gabriel will actually be an actual Israeli intelligence officer. He's going to enter a new phase of his career.
And Ramona, others are in the offing. I want to tell the audience, if you have not yet read a Silva book, my personal preference is to begin with The Kill Artist and then move through the 21. Many people don't do that, but I know a number of people who through COVID, and COVID, by the way, is very ever present in this book. We're going to talk about that in a second, who became Silva addicts to get them through the pandemic. And if you're still hesitant to go out, if you're still worried about the virus in the United States or anywhere around the world, just get you to Silva's book list and start reading. You'll have fun and you'll learn a lot. Danny, there are only two characters missing that I wished you'd put back in. One gets a mention, the Dawn. But I most missed one character. You have any idea who I missed the most? It is the goat. The goat. It's not, I missed the goat. And, otherwise.
It would. the Corsica angle comes from a character named Christopher Keller, who does appear in the book.
Yes.
It's just one of the most intriguing aspects of the book, Gabriel's relationship between the two of them. Christopher was contracted once to kill him. Christopher is very much a Gabriel Lawn restoration project. And, you know, those scenes that I said on Corsica, I have become aware of the fact that they really, really resonated.
They sure do. They sure do. Especially the old lady who looks into the ruins, whatever. But I'll tell people, I don't want to give any spoilers away. Go and read it. The Don has mentioned the goat is not. I hope the goat is fine. So, Daniel.
I'm not sure about the goat.
It could be a long time. Recovered masterpieces or stolen masterpieces show up in the past, it's always very believable because we read stories about that. But I've never read about an adult prodigy discovered in music. Now, Isabel Brunner is that. Does it happen?
Look, one of the things that is true is that, you know, there's a thin line between, you know, people who have that gift to go to become professionals and people who choose not to do it. I happen to actually know someone who was a child prodigy and studied very seriously and didn't think he was quite good enough to be a professional concert pianist and chose a different path in life. And I don't think it's that uncommon at all. And the other thing is that these people like her, who are, you know, very classically trained and educated, there are many, 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 many very good musicians out there. She never stopped playing. She never stopped working at her craft. She also just happened to be a math genius, as many musicians are. And she ended up taking a different path in life. That path led her to a bank that I call Rhine Bank. And it is, you know, quite literally a rogue bank. It is the dirtiest bank in the world. And when she discovers that bank is laundering money for Russians, she blows the whistle. And one thing leads to another, and she ends up working for Gabriel Lahn in an operation against a man at the center of Vladimir Putin's inner circle.
One of the defining marks of Daniel Silva's work is a lattice work of plot overlaid by a beautiful plant growth of art and history. And in this book, more than any other previous, I've read all 21, there is a echo of past books. Now, there have been echoes before because characters recur, but this one actually tantalizes people with references back to plots. And I think maybe more than you have done so before. Am I right about that?
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know how long the Lawn series will continue. But as he nears the end, I have this, I just love revisiting old characters. And one of the things about the Lawn series is that old enemies and adversaries get turned into allies.
Some.
I've done that on numerous occasions. Some. Depends on how bad they were. But the daughter of ZZ Albacari, without giving too much away, becomes a beautiful, redemptive character in Portrait of a Spy. Martin Landisman, you know, tried to have Gabriel killed in a novel, and now he works with Gabriel in this book. That is sort of a theme of the book. The books deal with restoration on many different levels. Restoration of paintings, restoration of people, restoration of historical wrongs, and I hope restoration of our democracy, which is in need of some retouching right now.
You will get people mad at you from left and right on this book. The left will be upset with your gentle caricature of the do-gooders with billions who hold museum openings and benefits that they drive their luxury limos to instead of taking mass transportation. Elegantly done. They will, actually, I have no criticism at all. I think some nutters, I don't know if any nutters read you to begin with, will think you've been unfair to Cuba. You can't be by definition. They are crazy people. And so good for you. Genuinely crazy people. But I wanted to ask you about how you mastered. Now, I've read Stephen Schwartzman. I try to get into public into finance. I try and follow financial crime. You explain mirror transactions in two pages. I never understood them before. I never understood mirror money laundering until The Cellist. How did you learn this stuff?
So you had heard about the mirror trades and that technique. You were aware of those.
I was, but I didn't know how it worked.
Yeah. Well, I guess my technique is to make it as human as possible and to turn the trade into something that's easily understandable, to show it on the page, and to write about it with some flair and I hope some humor.
Yes.
And it is a technique that a certain bank developed at the time, I mean, the New Yorker wrote a very detailed piece about it. It's totally legal, unethical, but a legal way to turn rubles, dirty rubles, into clean dollars and have them in the West. I explained it in a way, I hope, that was both easy to understand and at the same time entertaining.
Oh, yeah. I got it, everyone's going to get it because I really am confused on how it worked. Now I understand. It actually alarmed me because not just the Russian, but the cartels have to launder lots and lots of money. I mean, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars have to be laundered.
Billions. President Biden and Jake Sullivan were writing about this for a couple of years when they announced, the Biden administration announced their initiative. Your friend and my friend David Ignatius wrote a wonderful piece about it, about the billions and billions and billions of dollars that are sloshing through our system and corrupting our economy and our government. And yes, London is a center for this. Obviously, Switzerland is. Obviously, Geneva is. But the depth of our economy, the depth of our property market, the fact that we have anonymous purchases, the fact that we have developers who are allowed to and willing to engage in all cash transactions makes the United States a preferred destination for this money. And I guarantee you, Vladimir Putin owns property in the United States. I have just no doubt.
Of course. So do all the billionaire princelings in Beijing. When we come back, a final segment about Putin and China. Don't go anywhere. Daniel Silva's new book, The Cellist, is available now at Amazon.com. It will drop in 2 weeks. You will not get it unless you pre-order because it's going to be one of those signs you hate to see. Temporarily out of stock. Don't be that person. Go get Daniel Silva's new book and come back for the last segment of this July 5 show here on The Hugh Hewitt. Beethoven's Cello Sonata in A Major on page 127 of The Cellist America, Daniel Silva's latest book. I've got to ask you, Daniel, I had Admiral Stavridis on last week, and we were talking about your books. He's an avid fan. Of course, you probably know Jim. And he and I were talking about China versus Russia, Putin versus Xi. His assessment, and I don't quarrel with the former head of NATO, is that Russia is more of a threat on cyber warfare, and China is more of a threat on influence and espionage. And I didn't actually understand that Russia was more muscular on cyber, but he, you believe that, obviously, from The Cellist. He believes it. Are you ever going to tackle the princelings of Beijing, or is it just too late in Elon's career because Israel has a deal with the CCP, which makes me upset?
You know what? The Elon series is the real world one step removed, one or two steps removed. The truth is that the Israelis have been prepared. preparing for our departure from the Middle East for many years. They are trying to stay on decent terms with Putin. And they, like the Gulf countries and the rest of the region, know that, that China is coming. China's already there. And that unless we really regain our footing, China is you know, going to be the largest economy in the world very soon. And so that there is that balance, and they are dealing with that reality. So I don't see a China book in my future. That's a short answer to the question.
All right.
And while I agree, I guess I would disagree a little bit I mean, Russia is the king of the information operation.
That's cyber.
And they pioneered it. They pioneered it. They use it against us all the time, 24/7. They are waging war on us 24/7. Hybrid warfare, they call it. And it was the motivations for it are numerous, but part of it, it burns in Vladimir Putin's heart, is pure revenge and vengeance for the fall of the Soviet Union. He hates us. We can try to limit the conflict to a few spheres. We can try to work with him where possible, but he is never, ever going to be a reliable ally of the West. He has positioned himself with people as someone who's waging war on the West, and it's just not going to change.
100% agree with that. I just think that, like Sun Tzu said, better that your opponent not know you're at war. And I believe President Xi does, in fact, have the same operation with much less of a profile because he's not the Bulgarian that Putin is. Let me close, though, by asking you about the virus.
The virus, sure.
Yeah, the pandemic is through the book and elegantly dealt with. In truth, as you note in the afternote, you try to be true. You have to bend history a little bit. How did it affect you, your writing, your family, your book promotion? I mean, what happened to you during the pandemic?
Well, let me add, say one thing about the book. This book was originally set largely in a post-pandemic world. When I decided after the Capitol siege to include the Capitol siege and the inauguration in this book, I had to very quickly take what I had written and back it up in time. And fit it into the pandemic world. You know what? I as a writer, I'm fairly isolated to begin with, and so you know I haven't been able to travel anywhere. I love to travel and write to the places that I write about. That's been very difficult. I think about the 600,000 Americans that we've lost, and that we're. I worry about the variants. I worry that we're about to have a resurgence. But mainly, I'm worried about our country. And I think that the virus was an accelerant for some very dangerous trends that we've got going on in this country. And I'm nervous, Hugh. I wish I could say that I wasn't, but I'm very nervous. And I think that's reflected in the book.
As Gabriel tells to Isabella, it's okay to be nervous. He likes people. So I will close by saying it's just a wonderful work. And it's so wonderful for Silva fans on many levels. They won't be able to put it down. I don't think I gave anything away. You gave away a little bit more than I would, Daniel. But my congratulations. It will be a number one New York Times bestseller. And friends, I'm warning you, it will not be there if you wait. So don't wait. Get a pre-order. And get that book delivered on the first day. Good luck, Dan. Are you going to do any book tour at all? You used to post that at Daniel Silva Books, but you didn't go out.
I'm going to do a virtual tour again. I think I might go into a bookstore for a private stock signing. But no, my company, HarperCollins, forbids in-store events. So it's all virtual once again.
next summer, and I hope there will be. I've got 7 more years on my contract. I need 7 more Daniel Silva books. Daniel Silva, thank you. The book is The Cellist. Have a great July 5th, America. I'll be back live tomorrow on July 6th here on The Hugh Hewitt Show. That concludes today's episode of The Interview with Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening. Make sure you come back and check out all the other podcasts on the Salem Podcast Network. And remember to thank our sponsors, AndrewandTodd.com. If you believe in long-form interviews like I do, then do your real estate transactions with Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian. I've known both men for a long time. AndrewandTodd.com. Go there, answer a couple of questions. They'll tell you what's best to do with your house, or call them at 888-888-1172. You'll be glad you did, and you'll be glad that you listened to the next episode of The Interview.